So, you know, the issue is, Dr. Hamouda, you are Egyptian, you know, you have worked in Egypt. You understand your people and the entire region better than we who are sitting here.
Sure.
Yes, Palestinians have shown this amazing resilience. But where is this resilience in the Arabs, in Egyptians? Why are the ordinary people not rising up, not forcing, you know, aid through the Rafah border? What's wrong with all the Arabs in the region?
The problem is that many Arabs feel their own countries American protectorates, unfortunately. And America has a favorite baby, Israel, which President Nasser described as a territorial aircraft carrier. Land-based aircraft carrier, working for the interest of the former imperial powers and the current ones represented by the United States and some Western countries. Since Sadat went into a separate peace, the whole system, Arab system at the time, broke down. And the smaller countries have become much easier to control by the West than larger countries. Egypt is in a very difficult state. And the Israelis wanted to push the Gaza people into the Sinai. And Egypt works very hard to try and keep them there using all means available and possible. Other countries are willing to compromise. I can't understand why the world and Arab countries do not raise the issue that Israel should be held responsible for the rebuilding of Gaza.
Absolutely, Dr. Modal.
Is the Israelis destroy and the Arabs pay for repairing and rebuilding the destruction of the Israelis? Yeah.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I would have loved to discuss a lot more. But, you know, the reality is the Arab nations really need to wake up, you know, to end this imperialism that is taken over the entire world. Thank you so much, Dr. Hamouda, for being with us. And thank you. We play you out with the music of the artist Saif and the sounds of Palestine. Goodbye.
step towards a life of complete freedom. We can see our dream getting closer and closer. We're almost there. Oh God, thank you for giving us strength to hold on. And now we're here together.
Salam and welcome, friends, near and far. This is Iran Radio coming to you from Tehran, and I'll be your guide through a rich tapestry of sound stories of faith, voices of thought, and the pulse of a world in motion. Keep listening, because what's ahead is worth your time. Our next program is Leader's Speech. Listen to English translations of selected segments and speeches by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on various important occasions. Following this program, we have another segment of radio productions for this hour. Next up, we have Africa Today. For now, please stay with us for Leader's Speech.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
The following is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with school and university students. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayhi Husayniyah on November 3, 2025, on the eve of Student Day and the National Day of Fighting Global Arrogance. The U.S. dealt a heavy blow to the Iranian people. This is what happened on the 28th of Mordad. From that moment on, the Iranian nation came to know the U.S. It knew what a dangerous entity the U.S. was for the country. So we have known the U.S. since the 28th of Mordad. It wasn't something new to us. What I want to say is that after the coup took place, they brought the fugitive Mohammad Reza back to the country. And for 25 years, that hard-hearted, tough, oppressive dictator ruled the people. During all of that time, the United States stood by Mohammad Reza and supported him. The U.S. was a source of assurance for him. Now, this true enemy of the Iranian nation has an embassy here. This true enemy of the Iranian nation. When the revolution took place, the Americans were the first to oppose it. The U.S. Senate passed a resolution against the Iranian nation and against the revolution. Soon afterward, they allowed Mohammad Reza entry into the United States. They housed him in a hospital under the pretext of medical treatment, but their political and security agencies maintained contact with him. The Iranian nation realized this, and the people were furious. Demonstrations against the U.S. erupted in the streets. Why? Because the people sensed that the events that had taken place on the 28th of Mordad were about to be repeated, and that taking Mohammad Reza to the U.S. was a prelude to bringing him back to Iran using the various methods the Americans have. The people became furious. They took to the streets and staged demonstrations. A part of these demonstrations was the movement of the university students who entered the embassy and seized it. However, they didn't intend to stay in the embassy. It's important for everyone to understand this. The students weren't planning on staying inside the embassy. They only wanted the world to see the Iranian nation's fury over the U.S. granting entry to the Shah. That was all. Their intention was to go, stay for 2 or 3 days, and then come out. This was the students' intention. But after they went inside the embassy, they discovered documents there showing that the matter was much graver than they had initially thought. This wasn't just about a resolution passed by the U.S. Senate. The U.S. Embassy was a center for conspiracy, plotting, and strategizing to sabotage the revolution.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
He was the most powerful vice president in the entire history of the United States. And he was also the architect of the Iraq War, a war where, as you know, there were no weapons of mass destruction. Welcome to Gringo. Let's get this show started.
Así empezamos, Gringo.
Secretary of State saying that we're very close to a deal in the Middle East.
We've been talking about this Department of Homeland Security. So we won the First World War.
Is he a Mexican-American that is offended by...
Gringo.
Ese arquitecto de la guerra de Irak que acaba de morir a los 84...
The architect of the Iraq War, who just passed away at the age of 84, was one of the most powerful vice presidents in U.S. history. known as Dick Cheney. During the September 11th attacks, he was taken to a secure location to oversee the country's governance from there. However, following his death, the media attempted to sanitize his image, when in truth it marks the passing of a war criminal.
Now that Trump has ordered the so-called Operation Southern Spear as a war against narco-terrorists, it is essential to study Dick Cheney, who has just passed away without facing any consequences. Cheney was the promoter and driving force behind the aggressions similar to those that Trump threatens to unleash. Although Cheney did not target drug traffickers, the strategy remains the same. In several countries, he supported the overthrow of governments he disapproved of. September 11th was high big moment. The mastermind behind the response was Dick Cheney. What was the response? To protect the United States from terrorists. The outcome was war, massacre, bombs, oil business, and the invasion of Iraq, the target.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
The weapons of mass destruction that were promised never showed up. Instead, what appeared were hundreds of thousands of corpses and devastation. Cheney's impunity teaches a lesson to the people of the world.
I have two guests whom I greatly appreciate and value for their knowledge not only about Dick Cheney, but also about U.S. foreign policy, particularly in terms of military matters. Here in the studio, I have Mario Barracamonte. Mario Barracamonte is an international analyst, and I welcome you, Mario. It's great to have you in Gringo's studio. And joining us from Colombia, dear friends, is Fernando Suarez del Solar. Fernando Suarez, out of necessity, has become a significant activist against the war. And he is also the father of Jesus, the first Mexican soldier who lost his life in the Iraq War back in March of that fateful 2003. My dear Fernando, it brings me great joy to greet you after several years of not seeing each other.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
In fact, I am the grateful one, and I will start with Mario Barracamonte here in the studio, if you don't mind, Fernando. Mario, Dick Cheney has just passed away at the age of 84, and the media in the United States have tried to whitewash his image. The most they have said is that he betrayed the Republican Party because at the end of his life, he began to ask for votes for Kamala Harris from the Democratic Party. However, they omit all the atrocities that many human beings continue to suffer from on planet Earth, especially the Iraqis, due to the devilish acts he helped unleash in that region of the world.
In fact, Dick Cheney is indeed someone we could label as a war criminal. He is the mastermind, the great intelligence behind this entire mess. Perhaps he is the one who most fervently pushed for the invasion of Iraq. And not just that, but he also unleashed, along with the extraterrestrials, all this hubris and the global disaster of invading seven nations, destroying their sovereignty and causing the deaths of countless people. I believe the level of cynicism is comparable to that of Madeleine Albright, which is sheer audacity. The sacrifice of 500,000 children following the criminal sanctions imposed by the U.S., along with the invasion, was deemed worthwhile by some, whereas others referred to it collateral damage in this very serious matter. This initiated a complete disregard for humanity, establishing a hierarchy of human beings, with Afghans and Iraqis being considered second-class citizens, particularly in light of the controversial events surrounding the Twin Towers. Renowned analyst Rima Sen was one of the first to boldly question the situation, which is now viewed as a coup within the U.S., comparable to the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I believe this marks a true turning point in history, and for some, the beginning of World War III.
Well, I am not sure if you are a lawyer, but you know well that today, justice in the United States stands as the platform above all others. Unfortunately, such individuals often die with absolute impunity.
First of all, it must be made clear that international law doesn't exist for the U.S. and Israel. The USA has always operated under self-imposed rules outside of international organizations that do not serve its interests, while the others are manipulated. Secondly, behind all of this lies a mindset, an idea, a philosophy, a way of perceiving life based on the manifest destiny and the notion of being chosen, of being a peculiar nation selected by God. This belief grants them a sense of impunity and a status that elevates them above the rest of the humanity. They are not subject to international law or any human norms. Instead, they create their own laws, which often allow them to sacrifice those they deem inferior or unchosen.
Poder sacrificar a seres humanos inferiores que ellos y no seleccionados.
Bien, estimados amigos, vamos a pasar con Fernando.
Well, dear friends, we are going to talk with Fernando Suarez del Solar. His son, Jesus, was the first Mexican victim among several others. I interviewed many Mexicans. One of them lost a leg. Others were left mutilated. And some other from lifelong post-traumatic stress disorder and psychiatric issues. In the case of Jesus Suarez, son of Fernando Suarez del Solar, he sadly passed away, being the first Mexican victim. Fernando, it's a pleasure to greet you again. Could you share with us, for those who are hearing your experience for the first time, how it impacted you to the point that you became a frontline activist in the United States against the lies that led to the war?
Well, I need to mention first that I used to tell people that I have problem with this war, even before it started. I told my son many times that as a Mexican, he didn't need to go to a war that I believed was illegal. We had that conversation back in February 2003. However, he told me that he had given his word. His grandfather and I, as his father, had taught him to honor a commitment, so he felt he had to go fulfill it. He thought there wouldn't be a war, that it was just a show of strength, similar to what Donald Trump is doing now with Venezuela. And then the fateful date of March 27th came. The war and invasion began. And on March 27th, my son tragically lost his life due to an illegal American bomb, as per the Geneva Convention, known as cluster bombs. This was devastating for me because I understood that the war was about oil. A geopolitical struggle for territorial dominance. They spoke of weapons of mass destruction, and the vice president emphasized that this was the most dangerous thing in the world, which is why American soldiers, along with the British and other nations, went to war. What happened? The only weapons of mass destruction found were made in the United States, deployed by American planes that bombed cities, schools, and hospitals. I spent 2 months in Iraq in December 2003, and in December 2004, I witnessed those hospitals destroyed by the criminal bombs of the United States. Therefore, we cannot claim that this was about freedom or improvement for the Iraqi people. Sadly, today Iraq remains in a very dire situation.
If you could turn back time to that moment when you were talking to your son, knowing the harsh truths of an illegal war and everything that has happened since, would you insist more? I know my question might seem a bit silly since we can't go back to that moment, but given what's already happened, what would you say to Jesus?
Well, surely I would have kidnapped my son instead of convincing him. I would take him to Mexico, cross the border, and kidnap him. The reality is that the American military recruitment system is misleading, especially very deceptive, and it manages to dominate and convince these young people like my son, who have good intentions and love for their neighbors. They think, I will serve in the army to help children who are not under tyranny, and they leave with that illusion. Unfortunately, when they face reality, it is already too late. For my son, it was too late, and for many soldiers I personally knew, who you also met, others who are mutilated and have had their lives destroyed. Today, we see them living on the streets of the U.S., the most powerful country in the world, which has the highest number of homeless people in its territory. This is very important.
Mario, there is a historical addiction to war in the United States, an addiction in the sense that, as that famous book titled War is a Racket suggests, a book I highly recommend. What do you think about the fact that the United States consistently deceives its own youth, making them believe it's for the homeland and not for business, when in reality it is indeed for business?
It's clear that the main goal of war is business. It's all about the money. However, there are large corporations like Halliburton in Iraq that certainly drive this forward.
Led by Dick Cheney.
Exactly. It involves Rumsfeld's associates and everyone else in the matter. Additionally, beyond this corrupt elite known as the Deep State, there are all these elements that formed a group which hijacked the public institutions of the U.S., as they were everywhere, in the Pentagon, in the State Department, in the CIA, all over. Regardless of that, it reflects the idea of a cult of violence that I believe is historically rooted in that society, justifying violence and glorifying it. The violence that shapes the youth's upbringing, the violence that serves as a way of perceiving life, the reverence for weapons and so on. I believe that both elements come together, these corrupt corporations that have spread war everywhere, the general glorification of violence and the love for it. In the midst of this, there exists a significant hypocrisy, as all of this can be masked and can be deceived many young people, as has been stated here. They can mislead many youths under that hypocritical guise that the United States has operated under, not just now, but for many years. The very invasion of Mexico and the dismemberment of our territory also stems from this. It is not merely a violation of sovereignty, but a disguise that they always use to cloak their actions, which are inherently wrong, yet appear benevolent to everyone. So there is no such democracy, no such freedom, and nothing at all. The only real freedom is what becomes the license of large corporations to rule, first establishing themselves through violence and then ultimately engaging in plunder and imperialist extractivism, which is well known and was inherited from England, because in the end, England practiced that same policy in its empire.
Absolutamente, Fernando. Absolutely, Fernando. Vice President Dick Cheney, although he served under four U.S. presidents, is undoubtedly thrust into global fame for being the vice president of George W. Bush. He supported torture and claimed there were weapons of mass destruction. I firmly believe, without fear of being wrong, that it was a deliberate lie, not a mistake, as another criminal accomplice, José María Aznar, stated a few years back in Spain. What do you think about this issue? How can such sinister figures die without facing consequences, while the media attempts to clean up the image of murderous individuals who should be in prison, like Tony Blair and Bush himself, among others?
Como el propio Bush, etc.
Bueno, definitivamente, como dice...
Well, it's clear that, as mentioned, the United States has a double standard. It presents a very media-driven narrative on one hand, while on the other, it is invading, attacking, usurping, and stealing. This man who dies in impunity, just like him, several previous U.S. leaders and generals have also died with impunity. The attack on the Twin Towers was, from the very beginning, suggested to be a self-inflicted attack, a coup, as we pointed out. But what is happening in this country, the United States? Unfortunately, the education that has been provided since before the Vietnam War has taught the masses that if you are poor or a minority, you will be at the bottom, serving in the military, while I, as a white, upper-middle-class individual will be the one in control. What I say becomes law. The doctrines of the United States have always been this way. And today, under Trump's leadership, we are witnessing the full bloom of that total discrimination, the racism that was once silent among white people, now attacking our migrant brothers. This can be traced back to the Vietnam War, where they targeted and kidnapped the Pachucos, those Pachucos, when they killed Salazar.
Yes, Ruben Salazar, back in 1970.
It is well said that history is not being written today. It is being repeated today. That is the issue. Regarding the Iraq War, from my perspective, it stems from my personal experience of losing my son or having gone to Iraq and witnessed death, feeling terrified under bombs. This has been one of the worst massacres committed by the United States, not counting the extermination of Native Americans during the U.S. Midwest invasions.
Junto con Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney autorizó el waterboarding.
Alongside Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney approved waterboarding and other forms of torture, including those that took place in the Abu Ghraib prison, which Seymour Hersh initially exposed and later became globally infamous. Why, with so many examples of this policy and these types of situations, is there still a significant number of people in the world who seem unaffected by it? This question also applies to Mario, who will speak after you. Why is there such indifference? Currently, we are witnessing Mr. Trump together with Mr. Netanyahu committing atrocities in Gaza. Yet there are still people who defend them, Fernando. After this, I will speak with Mario.
Yes, it's similar to what happened in Iraq. When the Americans arrived in Iraq, they claimed they were welcomed with flowers as they toppled the statue of Saddam in the main square of Baghdad. It's exactly the same. People were saying, yes, they are liberating Iraq. We need to support them. We have to back them up. But they didn't see the massacre. What I don't understand about humanity today is that something worse than what happened in Nazi Germany is occurring right now, because all the Palestinians are being killed, including children and women, etc. Thanks to the media, the internet, and platforms like Facebook, everyone is aware, but they always have an excuse. They say we were attacked first. And while the United States claims that this support is good, it suggests that everything is fine. As is mentioned earlier, these two, I mean Israel and the United States, they stand above the law, and they will continue to do so, especially when the United States has a corrupt president, a criminal who has been convicted of 32 or 34 crimes, yet he is the leader of a country that is supposedly the most humane and democratic. I just don't understand American democracy. So what is happening? It seems that the world people are not studying, not reading the history, and they are completely unaware of what's happened in the history. It is repeating itself, and I am afraid. I am very afraid that history is repeating itself. Nowadays, Venezuela, Colombia, Gaza, and there are other places in Africa, etc.
Mario Barracamonte,
I believe that, first and foremost, the issue is that impunity has become the norm rather than the exception. Take Kissinger, for instance. I think he is the most sinister figure, dying in his own bed, surrounded by admiration from everyone, which is a recurring theme in the United States, not an exception. In other words, the prevailing morality reflects an inability to judge based on the truth. This ties into how the United States has distorted the truth, preached lies, and normalized them through a system of neuropirates. Essentially, there is a cognitive attack, a systematic propaganda war that began with Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud. Propaganda is everywhere for the United States. Selling a war is no different from selling a product. It has alienated and infantilized a society that has allowed itself to be infantilized, as consumption is essentially the ability to make people desire everything immediately and accept anything, even the most outrageous and absurd things, because we're living in a delusion, in a fantasy. This is the global issue, the disconnection from reality and the power of propaganda, aided by technology, to make people believe that things are exactly the opposite of what they truly are. This is the real danger, as today war can be peace, lies can be truth, and vice versa. We find ourselves in an Orwellian world, perhaps even worse. As the advisor from the World Economic Forum in Davos pointed out, many naive individuals read Yuval Noah Harari, who advises Klaus Schwab and claims that humans are hackable animals. If this is the level of understanding, if this is how deeply the dignity of humanity is perceived, reducing it to such a condition, then anything is possible. This marks the beginning of our own enslavement, especially with artificial intelligence dominating humanity, which poses a real threat in the hands of those lacking morals, boundaries, and humanity. This is exactly what we are witnessing. Today it is feasible to promote Tony Blair, a war criminal who advocated for this, to lead a corporation in Gaza built on the blood and ruins of the Palestinian people.
Absolutely. We're nearing the end. It's going by quickly.
La propaganda, bien dice el compañero. A mí, por ejemplo...
Yes, propaganda, as my friend rightly points out. For instance, I was the first father of an American soldier, despite not being an American citizen, who went to war, traveling to the very place where he lost his life. When I returned to the United States and began speaking out against the war, explaining the reality of Iraq in schools at that time, that's when the government's propaganda machine started to twist the news. They depicted me as a traitor, an ungrateful one, the person who disrespects his deceased son, who is regarded as a hero for the United States. This propaganda doesn't just affect me. It has impacted for about 23 years now this new generation that is currently on the streets attacking migrants, those who cover their faces in an attempt to, as they claim, cleanse the country. Let's look at history. What Hitler did, the new Hitler is doing the same. Trump, I mean, thanks to propaganda. It's very sad.
True, gracias a la propaganda. Eso es muy triste.
It's a wound that never heals. I can only imagine it's one of the worst things that can happen to a person. Typically, our children are meant to bury us, not the other way around. Do you have any final words?
Una reflexión final de tu parte?
Sí, cómo no, y más que mi hijo cumpliría años el 16 de noviembre.
Well, what I always tell students is that the best weapon against injustice, the best weapon against violence, is a book under your arm, reading, studying, respecting, and tolerating. Violence breeds violence and leads to death, while education fosters life. Thank you.
I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
As the U.S. closes door, China is opening new ones and redefining Africa's place in the world. There is talk of the continent turning Trump's punitive tariffs into a new opportunity. Now, will Africa rise to reshape its destiny, or will it be left behind in the global power struggle? And joining us today to discuss this important topic is Irete Bakara Yusuf. Now, she is a broadcast journalist and founder of African Journalists Against Genocide. Also with us today is Zizwe Chiguka. Now, he is the organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party and the African Party for the Independence of Guinea and Cape Verde. Join us for this week's edition of Africa Today as we discuss how African countries can turn Trump's punitive tariffs into an opportunity. When the United States raised tariffs on African exports to as high as 30% in the case of South Africa, shockwaves rippled across the continent. Overnight, billions in trade were at risk. Uganda, Gabon, and Niger had already lost their duty-free access under a U.S. program known as the African Growth and Opportunity Act. For many, it felt like punishment, but for Africa, it could be a wake-up call. Because while Washington is shutting doors, Beijing is opening them. By 2024, Africa-China trade had surged past $295 billion. In just the first 5 months of 2025, it added another $134 billion. Factories, ports, and railways financed by China are changing the way Africa connects with the world. At the same time, African nations are rethinking their own future. The African Continental Free Trade Area is laying the foundations for the world's largest single market. Across the continent, a new spirit of self-reliance is taking hold. Now, these tariffs aren't just about economics. They are moves in a global power struggle over currency, over alliances, over the future of trade itself. Now, the question is, will Africa turn exclusion into power and claim its place in the new multipolar world order?
Trump's tariffs, Africa's opportunity.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa recently addressed a virtual BRICS leaders' extraordinary summit that focused on the current economic environment and the state of the multilateral system. Now, commenting on the tariffs war imposed by the U.S., he said that we are witnessing seismic shifts in global trade that present both challenges and opportunities. Let's take a listen.
We are witnessing seismic shifts in global trade that present both challenges as well as opportunities in the reordering of the global economy. There is a shift from a unipolar to a multipolar world. This moment is marked by intensifying global competition and growing geopolitical tensions. Unilateral tariff actions are contributing to an increasingly protectionist environment, which poses great hardships and danger for the countries of the Global South. The uncertainty of the new trading regime has already negatively affected employment levels in my own country, South Africa, and is an obstacle to our economic growth. We are therefore supportive of meaningful BRICS initiatives that improve the resilience of our economies as BRICS countries.
Well, the South African president, they are speaking of new opportunities for Africa amid the trade war imposed by the U.S. president on Africa. Now, let's start off with Irete Bakara Yusuf. Given the recent discussions surrounding the tariffs imposed on African exports by the U.S., do you believe Africa should view these as an opportunity to to reduce its reliance on Western markets?
I think it's important that Africa begins to actually take control and steer and sort of pull away more and more from its dependency on Western markets. Why is that? Because Africa needs to realize the only way that Africa can grow is to continue or begin to do more and more business with the within themselves, within Africa, across the region, and, you know, pull away from the powers that the Western region had over Africa. Indeed, the only way we can actually begin to see a growth, and if you like, a Viva Africa, a fully independent Africa, an Africa that works for Africans, and indeed her massive youth, is to actually continue to do business.
Thank you. Now, let's bring in Zizwe Chiguka. Do you think Africa's ongoing efforts to reduce reliance on the U.S. through initiatives like the African Continental Free Trade Area will help shield the continent from the impacts of a U.S. trade war?
The Africa Free Trade Agreement will definitely help to buffer the African nation states against the tariff policies of the current U.S. administration, basically because Africa is the richest continent on Earth, and the economies of Africa, they need to be integrated so that they're not so dependent on foreign direct investment or foreign markets. Many of the nation states in Africa are dependent upon U.S. foreign market for sales, but if we integrate the economies of Africa, and the African Free Trade Agreement is a step in that direction, we will become less dependent upon the U.S. economy as a foreign market.
President Donald Trump's aggressive tariff policies, particularly the imposition of reciprocal tariffs of up to 50% on imports from countries with trade surpluses with the U.S., have significantly disrupted global trade dynamics. African nations heavily reliant on U.S. markets for exports like textiles, agriculture, and minerals have been among the most affected. In response, many are actively seeking new markets across Asia to mitigate the adverse economic impacts.
President Trump's recent decision to exempt key African minerals like gold, tungsten, uranium, and graphite from U.S. tariffs has raised questions about the underlying motives of these trade policies. Now, the administration justifies these exemptions as necessary to secure critical supply chains vital for sectors like aerospace, electronics, and energy. Now, Mr. Chiguka, how do you interpret this move?
The Trump administration could not put tariffs on those rare earth minerals because of the need for those rare earth minerals. It's the same thing in Africa. There are certain things, mineral resources, like uranium, coltan, et cetera. The administration in the U.S. cannot afford to put tariffs on those kinds of things because of the need. So they take people as fools, basically, when they have these economic arrangements and negotiations with other countries. And it's also a result of colonialism in the past in Africa that the U.S. government is able to bully people in Africa, the governments in Africa, in terms of making these arrangements to the detriment of the economy of the African nation states. So unification is the key. The integration of the African economy will stop all of those problems that the colonialists and imperialists are trying to impose on the African nation states.
Thanks for that, Mr. Chiguka. Let's now take a short break before we continue our discussion on punitive U.S. tariffs on Africa and how they can be turned into an opportunity for the continent. Stay with us.
Trump's tariffs, Africa's opportunity.
The African Continental Free Trade Area stands as a cornerstone of Africa's development vision under Agenda 2063. Now, a unified market holds immense potential, unlocking boundless opportunities for the continent's growth and prosperity. The Secretary General of this Pan-African body elaborates on the opportunities.
By the year 2035, the AfCFTA market, the combined GDP of the AfCFTA market is estimated to be close to $7 trillion United States dollars. That means that there are opportunities for small medium enterprises, for young entrepreneurs to export across regions of the African continent and to take advantage of this vast market. However, if we don't have an integrated single market, we will not be able to achieve the positive projections that many around the world have made about the potential of the AfCFTA.
Well, as Africa continues to develop its economic strategies, initiatives like the African Continental Free Trade Area are undermining the U.S. Multilateral trade frameworks with Africa, such as the so-called African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. This is seen by many as presenting an opportunity for Africa to push for stronger economic integration within the continent itself. Ms. Bakare Yusuf, what are your thoughts on this?
Absolutely, it does. I mean, AGOA really, yes, Nigeria, my country, was one of the largest users, if not the largest users of AGOA, but, you know, that no longer exists. And again, AGOA was just a way of, you know, it was the American soft power way of controlling African countries. So certainly we should get away. And I can't say, I can honestly say for myself, I am one of those who sees this as a great, great opportunity for Africa to free itself of the American stronghold. But the question is Africa ready? They need our resources. The same President Trump that's imposing tariffs on South Africa, on Nigeria, etc., that's weaponizing tariffs, is actually denying the rare earth. He's talking about, oh, I'm stopping the war in Congo, you know, in exchange for natural resources. Well, he hasn't even stopped any war, but I have no doubt he's probably signed the natural resources on how to steal from Congo, how to steal from Sudan, how to steal from Nigeria. Heck, how to steal from as many parts of Africa as possible. And those are the things that we need to stop from happening. If African countries had led the initiative and ensured that the war in Congo, the genocide going on, is actually stopped and they're able to get there and stop it, talk to their brother leaders, put a stop to it, then we wouldn't have had a President Trump who would be able to interlude and claim that he stopped a war, which he hasn't stopped. I must keep saying that. He hasn't stopped. What he did was to sign a contract to collect more minerals, to steal, not collect, to actually thieve and steal more minerals from Africa in the future, in order to do a ceasefire that only lasted a few days.
The exclusion of African countries from AGOA presents a significant new opportunity for the continent to reconsider and potentially break free from trade agreements that may have restricted its long-term growth and potential. Now, Mr. Chiguka, how has AGOA's narrow focus on specific industries and reliance on external partners hindered the continent's ability to diversify its economies and pursue more self-sustaining models of development?
Definitely think that this is an opportunity for Africa to unify economically, politically, socially. On the economic front, the African Growth and Opportunities Act was a thing that was used by the imperialist powers to keep a dependency relationship of these newly independent African states. So this would work in our favor to spark a change in Africa to further integrate the African economy. And so the U.S. administration is helping to mobilize our people for greater forms, levels of unity on the economic front. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing that they are actually trying to impose these tariffs. So now we can integrate our economies and be less dependent on the African Growth and Opportunities Act, which is to the disfavor of the African nation states anyway.
China's expanding influence in Africa represents a significant shift from the historically exploitative engagement of Western powers, particularly the United States. Many analysts view the increasing trade between China and African nations as a constructive alternative to the punitive tariffs often associated with U.S. economic policy.
There's a China-Africa summit every year in which the Chinese forgive the debt of many African nation states. And also China has helped to build infrastructure projects throughout Africa, such as the Trans-Am Railroad back in the 70s. So that relationship with China has always been a positive and is increasingly becoming even better with their help financially and economically, so that we are less dependent upon the U.S. and the European imperialists that charge astronomical interest rates on these loans that they give us. Because if you look at all the nation states in Africa that have taken out International Monetary Fund loans, they're still paying the interest and they can't even get to the principal. So therefore, the indebtedness of African nation states to IMF is continuing to rise, whereas China is helping and forgives many of the loans so that we can become less dependent on the International Monetary Fund.